scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoogian of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man, as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoogian making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream that one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today.
That's Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.'s famous I Have a Dream speech. April 4th marked the 50th anniversary of King's assassination. King's memory now has kind of risen to the level of American sainthood. He was a character in his day upon which public opinion was very divided. That's an important thing to remember. Do you have liberal friends or progressive family members who think that religion has no place in the public square, and yet they still have glowing things to say about Martin Luther King Jr. and his efforts that were based largely in his religion? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about Martin Luther King Jr. and religion in the public square, Dr. Robert George. Dr. George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including his latest, Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. He's co-author of a recent op-ed in the Wall Street Journal titled Dr. King's Radical Biblical Vision. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's a pleasure to be back on the show, Todd. Thanks for inviting me.
How do you explain the fact that many secular progressives who want to eliminate religion from the public square speak so favorably about the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.?
I don't explain it, and I don't think it can be explained. It seems quite hypocritical, actually, for secular progressives on the one hand to say that people ought not to bring religious arguments and religious motivations into the public square, that legislation ought not to be based on religious motives and so forth. And then on the other hand, to praise Martin Luther King for his work and witness, since after all, Dr. King could not have been clearer that his own motivations were fundamentally religious. He advocated for racial justice, against segregation, on the principle that all men and women are brothers and sisters under the universal fatherhood of God. And he premised his arguments on the idea that people have a unique and profound and inherent dignity and virtue of being made in the image and likeness of God. So it's, I think, a real problem. They really can't have it both ways. If religion has no place in the public square, if religious rhetoric, advocacy on the basis of religious positions has no place in our politics, then Dr. King should be condemned by them as someone who imported his religion and tried to impose it on the entire nation. On the other hand, if King is the hero of civil rights that they believe, and I believe he is, then I think they'd better cut it out with these claims that other people representing the pro-life cause or the pro-marriage cause or what have you ought to keep their religious motivations out of the public square.
Talk about the phenomenon that you note in the op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal, that in his day, the public opinion about King was ambivalent, to say the best. And then he has become, almost without qualification, a hero of American history.
Yes, that's true. I want to thank my co-author, Professor Cornel West, for joining me on the op-ed that you kindly have called attention to. Professor West is a man of the left. I'm on the conservative side, so we disagree about many, many political issues and some important moral questions. We both, however, are Christians. He comes from the same African-American tradition of Christianity that Dr. King came from. We have that. We have in common our shared Christian conviction and our belief that Dr. King was right, not only in the substance of his views about equality and civil rights, but also on the foundation of his views, that people's basic human rights exist and ought to be respected because human beings really are made in the image and likeness of the divine ruler and creator of the universe. We point out, as you say, at the beginning of the op-ed piece, which again appears in today's Wall Street Journal, that in his own time, King was criticized from various sides. Some people, more conservative types, regarded him as a rabble-rouser. Some even accused him of being a communist sympathizer, and there's no doubt that communists did try to infiltrate King's movement. At the other extreme, radicals, including black radicals, people like H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael, accused King of being an Uncle Tom in a famous speech by Malcolm X before his own conversion to a more moderate position. Malcolm X, clearly referring to King, although not using his name, referred to him as a house Negro. These insults to King reflected the criticisms that people at opposing extremes had of King. But today, almost everyone recognizes King as a hero. Now, I should point out, King was not an Orthodox Christian. He was a liberal Christian in the theological sense of liberal. Where he would fit on the political spectrum today is a debatable question. That's one of the things we point out in the op-ed piece. But his training at the Boston University School of Theology was in the liberal tradition of Christianity. There are different writings of his, texts that seem to be ambivalent about the historicity of the resurrection of Jesus. There are even, in his early writings, some questions about whether he really believes that Jesus is God incarnate. Now, there are some later writings that do make him appear more orthodox. But where he is undoubtedly rooted in biblical faith is in his idea of human beings having a unique and profound and inherent and equal dignity based on their being made in the image and likeness of God. On that, there can be no doubt of the biblical basis of King's thought.
He has also, in addition to becoming a hero of American history, he's also become a wax nose in a lot of ways. Everyone claims him for almost everything. How does that work?
Yeah, well, we point that out in the article as well. Things that he said can be useful to different people at different points on the political spectrum. He famously said in his I Have a Dream speech that he looked forward to the day when his little children would be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. And there, of course, he was condemning segregation against black Americans, which was the great stain on our, horrible stain on our history. Well, opponents of affirmative action in the sense of race-based preferences in hiring or admission or government contracting, critics of race-based preferences say, well, we are just following on Dr. King's principles here of color blindness, that we should judge everybody by the content of their character or by their ability, by their dedication and commitment and hard work, and not by the color of their skin. So to give people extra points on an exam or to give a thumb on the scale to a black firm as opposed to a white firm, black-owned as opposed to white-owned, I mean, when it comes to government contracting or whatever, is wrong, and it's a violation of Dr. King's principles. Now, we don't know where King himself would be on that question because it didn't arise in his lifetime. It came shortly after that. Became an issue, I should say, shortly after that. People who advocate in favor of same-sex marriage, something I have very strongly opposed and continue to oppose, but people who advocate on behalf of redefining marriage to include same-sex partners as married couples, which the Supreme Court has now imposed, they appeal to King as well. They say, well, we're just appealing to the civil rights doctrine of equality that is represented by Martin Luther King. But here again, we don't know. Nobody knows what King would say about that if he were here today. If we look at the black church as a whole, the black church has been on the side of traditional marriage, not on the side of redefining marriage in the way you'd have to redefine it to include same-sex partners. That is, redefining marriage as sexual romantic companionship or domestic partnership, as opposed to the traditional biblically based conjugal view of marriage as the one flesh union of a man and a woman as husband and wife. But again, we don't know where King would be. Professor West and I have both invoked King's principles in our own advocacy. His critique of what he calls empire, imperialism, his critique of capitalism or the unregulated free market. He invokes King, and in my pro-life work, when I defend the unborn child or the person with Down syndrome or other handicaps or the frail elderly who are in jeopardy of having their lives devalued and becoming victims of euthanasia, I too invoke King's principles. But, you know, we need to do that with a certain humility, understanding that we cannot speak for King. We can do our best to try to work out the implications of his fundamental biblical principles, and we should all be doing that. But we can't try to own King or control King or claim that he would favor whatever we happen to favor in politics.
You actually suggest, along with Professor West, that the best way to honor his legacy is, rather than claim him for our side, unless we have a clear indication that's where he stood, imagine him as a critic. What do you mean by that?
Well, we mean to show a little intellectual humility. If King is your hero, and there's a lot that was heroic about King, he gave his life for the cause of civil rights. He had many failings, by the way, and we acknowledge those. He understood himself to be a sinner. People today, you know, might treat him as a saint, but he understood himself to be a sinner, someone who failed often in the moral life. It's well known that he committed adultery and did other wrongs, but for those who do regard him as, in many ways, all of us should regard him as heroic, let's think about what he might have to say by way of criticism of any position that we hold. What if it turned out, just as a thought experiment, that we learned that King was on the opposite side of an issue from where we are on the particular issue? Let's imagine, well, what would his reasoning be? What would cause him to be where he is? Really, it's just a heuristic device, but it's a heuristic device that's meant to assist in the project of teaching us all to adopt intellectual humility and an openness to other people's arguments and a willing to listen and a recognition of our own fallibility.
We're talking with Dr. Robert George about Martin Luther King Jr. and religion in the public square. When we come back, we'll talk about a kind of use of religion in the public square that actually trivializes those truths. I am confident that Scott Klusendorf is going to be explaining how abortion is a civil rights issue at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Scott's going to be joined by Hank Hanegraaff, Craig Parton, Angus Manouge, Hans Feeney, Will Wheaton, and Jonathan Fisk. Attendance at the conference is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Find out more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. We'll be right back.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority. They've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
Am Abend, aber desselbigen Sabbats, da die Jünger versammelt und die Türen verschlossen waren, aus Furcht vor den Juden, kam Jesus und trat mitten ein.
That's the Bach Cantata 42, In the Evening, However, of That Very Same Sabbath. Now, you can hear it Sunday afternoon at 1 and Sunday evening at 8 Central at LutheranPublicRadio.org and on the LPR mobile app. These weekly cantatas are brought to you uninterrupted, commercial-free, thanks to the Substitute Organist Service. Substitute Organist Service provides the liturgy and service music in addition to hymns. The service is operated with an iPad, so it's very simple, very reliable. The quality of the music is excellent, but more than that, it's presented in a way to encourage and lead singing and participation rather than a performance. Pieces contain proper introductions, breathing pauses, and various stops between the stanzas. You can learn more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com, churchmusicsolutions.com. We're talking about the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Religion in the Public Square. Dr. Robert George is our guest. He holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's author of several books, including his latest, Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. And he's co-author of a recent op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal titled Dr. King's Radical Biblical Vision. Dr. George, I want to return to something we were talking about before, and that is the use of biblical ideas or phrases in the public square. It's really quite common if you count those used by public figures and politicians, but it's usually done in a very facile way, one that, to my mind, trivializes the truths that are behind those things. That is something, to my knowledge, that Dr. King didn't do.
I think that's probably right, that he was careful. Of course, coming out of that rich heritage of African-American Christianity, which is, of course, predominantly Protestant, biblically very, very literate. The Bible is at the center of African-American worship in most of the great historic African-American churches, and indeed in the independent black churches. King knew his scripture, and he knew to be careful about invoking it, that you needed to exercise a kind of rigor and discipline in the use of scripture. I dare say that a lot of politicians, even those who are sincere Christians, probably don't know their Bible that well. Biblical literacy has declined generally in this country, and maybe a little fast and loose when it comes to quoting scripture and invoking scripture in support of their policies. Now, one politician, I don't mean to get into politics here and be endorsing people and so forth, but in fairness, I have to say one politician who regularly does invoke scripture, but does it in a rigorous and disciplined way, is Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida who ran for president. Again, I'm not meaning to say that I agree with all his policies, or I'm not endorsing him, although I do, as it happens, like him, and as it happens, I do agree with many of his policies. But what I'm pointing out here is, here's a contemporary politician who does know the Bible and who's disciplined and rigorous about invoking the Bible. Does it frequently, but not in a fast and loose way.
We once asked you, Dr. George, how much different the Supreme Court would be had the Senate not rejected the nomination of Robert Bork. How much different do you think civil rights would be today if Martin Luther King had not been assassinated in 1968?
Well, we just can't say. It is simply impossible to say. Can I answer an easier question? I'll ask myself and answer an easier question. Where would civil rights be had it not been for Martin Luther King? How about that?
Yeah.
Can I offer you an opinion on that? I think that's easier because the potential for the civil rights movement to become a violent revolutionary movement, given the hundreds of years of vicious, brutal oppression of blacks in a white supremacist system, was great. There was every risk of violent revolution and even racial warfare. King's very self-conscious decision to adopt a strict policy of nonviolence, to require people who were part of his movement to maintain a nonviolent posture, even when violence was used against them, that was an incredible gift to the country because it made it possible for civil rights to advance without the descent into really significant, large-scale, countrywide violence. Now, there was some violence. There were some riots. We still have some violence. There are still radicals who are calling for violence in response to injustices, including some police shootings that were clearly not warranted. But King's legacy lives on in this. And our civil rights movement was and is, on the whole, a nonviolent movement. And for that, really, we owe Martin Luther King a great debt. Things could easily have gone the other way.
Finally then, Dr. George, what can Christians today in the public square learn from the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.?
Well, the first thing is to stick to your principles and make sure they're the right principles. If we stick to those basic biblical, and I would add natural law principles of human dignity, equality, respect for justice and the common good, if we stick to those, we're going to be in good shape. That we might have some very big obstacles to surmount. We've had a lot of cultural decay and decline over the last 50 years or so. The ideology of expressive individualism has had a profound impact on our institutions and on our people. But if we stick to those basic principles in defending the sanctity of human life, in defending marriage, in fighting poverty and injustice, we're going to be okay. So the first thing I would say is stick with those principles just as King did. Secondly, I'd say be persistent just as King was persistent. King wasn't necessarily patient. In fact, his letter from Birmingham Jail, his most famous piece of writing, is one in which he responds to critics of his impatience by saying, we've waited long enough for racial justice in this country. We need action now. So he wasn't necessarily patient, but he was persistent. Nonviolent, but persistent. And I think we should be persistent again in fighting for the causes we believe in, rebuilding the marriage culture, getting the proper understanding of marriage back into our law and culture, defending the lives of human beings at all stages of development, from the child in the womb all the way to the frail elderly person, perhaps suffering from a dementia. Fighting against poverty, which we still have in this country, in part because of the collapse of the marriage culture. So we need to be persistent in fighting for these things. Also, I think we need to learn from King that we don't hate our enemies. We must not hate our adversaries. Jesus's command was to love your enemies, and King took it literally. This is a point that Cornel West and I make in our op-ed today in the Wall Street Journal. King was against racial injustice. He was willing to fight against racial injustice. He was willing to fight against the people who tried to maintain the system of racial injustice, but he refused to let himself hate them. He refused to stir up hatred against them. He understood Christ's principle of love for all, including enemies. Now, we can do this. It doesn't mean that we're going soft. It doesn't mean that we're not being true to our principles when we refuse to hate our enemies but love them instead. Let's remember that we have no permanent enemies. All we have are potential converts to the cause of justice and the human good. That's how we should treat our adversaries. They for now are against us. They are for now our enemies. But our goal is not to destroy them, but to turn their hearts. We want to prevail in the struggle for justice and human rights, but we also want to win them over. We know that the whole history of our faith is a history of great conversions, from St. Paul to St. Augustine and down the line. There is nobody who's permanently lost. Think of the famous abortionist, Bernard Nathanson, one of the leaders of the abortion movement, one of the people who introduced the abortion cause to this country and fought to get abortion legalized, an abortionist himself who performed thousands of abortions. And yet, later in life, he is won over by the loving witness of the pro-life movement to the pro-life cause and becomes a powerful voice for life. If that can happen to Bernard Nathanson, as it happened in different ways to St. Augustine and to St. Paul and to so many others in the history of the faith, then it can happen to our adversaries today. You name me the person, Cecile Richards, head of Planned Parenthood, or former head of Planned Parenthood, you name me any person who is against us today, I want to say that person is not our permanent enemy. That's a precious human being made in the image and likeness of God, someone who's got a conscience that we can appeal to somewhere in there, and our job should be to win him or her over.
Dr. Robert George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University, author of several books, including his latest, Conscience and Its Enemies, Confronting the Dogmas of Liberal Secularism. He's co-author of a recent op-ed column for the Wall Street Journal titled Dr. King's Radical Biblical Vision. You can read it and purchase Conscience and Its Enemies at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. George, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you.
When we come back, it's time for This Week in Pop American Christianity Today. We'll be hearing some examples of bad Easter sermons. Pastor Chris Roseborough will be our guest.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These six engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholes. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org.